Today we're going to tell part three of the Jaden Nicorema story. This is the true redemption.
Yeah, the Building Better Humans Project podcast. Welcome. Be motivated and be inspired. Let's go.
G'day team, welcome back to the Building Better Humans Project podcast. Now, a bit over a year ago, actually in May of last year, I did a two-part series with Jaden Nicorema, who everyone now would know is the right hand to everything that I do. Back then I did the first one, which was Crashing Down, and the second one I called The Redemption. But truthfully, The Redemption is really only just coming to fruition now. So I thought it's a good time for us to talk about where Jaden is at, what that redemption's been like, what the road's been like in general. And so welcome to the show, Jaden Nicorema.
Hello again.
How are you, brother?
Buzzing.
Buzzing. Mate, a lot's going on. And obviously, well, let's take people back. So last year you played football with a family team. So just talk us through your thought pattern and the process there.
Yeah, so last year, COVID happened. I was with the Redcliffe Q Cup team. Football, through COVID, you weren't allowed to play. But there was like state comps going on. So we played Brizzy comp with all my family. Got to play with my brother, my dad, all my uncles. Some were in their 40s, 50s too. So it was a pretty special moment. And then after that, got a pre-season gig with the Warriors.
So you got all the way to the grand final and then couldn't play because the Warriors had by then had signed you for the preseason and they said no. And you were already carrying an injury, but you were still considering playing.
Yes. The family team, I sort of lost my love for footy. And then being around family, doing the training sessions with them, like it just, something just spiked in me. Like not just on the field, but off the field too. I was probably the happiest, you've probably seen it too, the happiest I've ever been. And the footy was a big part of that. Being surrounded by them. We talk about who you surround yourself with matters, and family is obviously a big part for me. My family's humongous.
Were you surprised to get a pre? I know your brother Cody, for those that don't follow Lee, but Jaden's brother Cody plays number six at the Warriors. Were you surprised that an NRL team would pick you up with no football? You'd had one game, pre-season game at Q Cup in the last 3 years at that stage.
Yeah. It's unheard of. Like, you wouldn't pick up an open twos player from nowhere. It's like picking up, like a Div 2 player going to the Olympics. Like, you just, it's unheard of. I was surprised. But what they did tell me was they've seen a lot of work that I've done off the field. And my footy previously, prior to that, there's a bit of value behind that. So I guess all teams really wanted me to do was to show that I was a good person, knowing that my footy, or they'd be able to help my footy progress if I was willing to do the work off the field too and not drag their club down. So the Warriors seen that first, and I was able to go to the Warriors to New Zealand physically for a pre-season. I had to do 2 weeks in isolation, and then it lasted 4 weeks there, which was unreal being back in a system. The biggest thing for me was like the recovery system, the yoga sessions, the ice baths, the saunas,
the stuff that probably young players hate.
Yeah.
Or take for granted.
I remember our first training session, heaps of the boys like didn't jump in. The ice bath, I'm like, what are you doing, man? Like, I used to pay, like, outside of footy, you pay like $99 for a weekly membership to do all this sort of stuff. And they're like, what?
So, that's pretty cool. So you were injured going over there. You were injured before you got there. So that was just so unfortunate. You'd injured yourself the week before they signed you. You get over there, that injury flares up. Take us through your mindset then. Was that a setback for you? Was that a kind of, okay, these things happen? And I'm talking about at the time, not to fast forward to where you're at now, but at the time, was it like, this could be my last opportunity? Did you feel like that at all?
Yeah, definitely. It was definitely a setback for me. And I knew that I was going into the preseason injured. And I could have easily just gone to Australia, trained with Cody, and did the preseason there. But I wanted to make a small impact on not just like my name, but like help the younger players at the Warriors not make the same mistakes as what I could do, what I did. And so I physically, I asked them to fly me to New Zealand, do the 2 weeks isolation, so then I could move into the Warriors house and have some small part on some of these younger boys actually making it through into the NRL. Yeah, so I thought the best way to do that was to actually physically live with them, see what they do from morning to nighttime, see what routines they're in, and then if I can try.
Were you able to make that impact, do you think? Yeah. Is it hard to get on across to young people who are at the start of what potentially is a pretty big career? And I guess when you're at that stage where you've done it under 12s, under 14s, under 18s, under 20s, and all of a sudden you're in a system, it just feels like, well, I'm meant to be here, so I don't have to do all that stuff. Do you run into a bit of that, I guess?
Yeah, I guess you don't know what you don't know. And all they've known is footy. So
and success at
and
that.
And success, yeah. And people just hyping you up and doing all the right things. But, yeah, it was kind of hard. But I guess if you're doing, if you're being the example, sooner or later they're going to catch on. And the boys seeing me getting up early, asking me when I was, why I was doing cold showers and why I was reading before bed and not being on my phone, and they start to realise that they've got little habits or bad habits that, like right now, they're not affecting them, but in the long run it will. And when you put that with my story and then me slowly teaching them, they start to listen, and then, yeah, they started to catch on. By the end of it, their diet started to change. They weren't on their phone before bed.
Which is pretty cool.
Yeah, it is cool.
Yeah. So it's interesting that with NRL clubs that you've spoken to, and you've spoken to numerous, I know the Cowboys back in at the same time as the Warriors were talking to you, they're looking at what you're doing outside of football. And, you know, I don't have to remind you, but just for people listening, I guess, when we first started working together, I said to you, why aren't you doing anything in the media? Why aren't you talking to people? What about podcasts? And you said, I don't want to do a podcast until I've made it back. And my belief at the time, and I didn't know if this was right or not, now we know it's right, but was, well, you've got to control your own narrative. You've got to tell people who you are. Otherwise, all they can experience is when you typed in Jade Nicarima was drugs, alcohol, bad boy, you know. And so you've effectively changed that narrative. But yeah, more importantly than that, I think you've changed the narrative internally. You realise that you're bigger than just football.
Yeah, I guess the big thing for me was I was scared, and I let the world dictate who I was. Although my actions dictated who I was at the start, I wasn't able to communicate who I was as well.
So let's take that back a step. So your actions, so people are telling you who they think you are. Your actions led to that initially, and then your actions after that starts playing to what the world is telling you as well.
Yeah.
And the example I'll give you is when I was working with the leadership kids on one of the, from Marsden, on one of the groups that you weren't in, we did a round table in here. And one of the things that came up when talking to them was that because of where you're from, the area that you're from, and because of whether people like this conversation or not, your skin colour, because they're Islander kids mostly, people have already made a decision about who you are. And they went, yeah, we see people judge us. We literally know that. But then I also said to them, but then you also behave to that because you think, well, they're already judging me that way. And then that perpetuates a problem. So you can change it, but it's coming from both sides. So effectively what we were trying to teach you was just be bigger than football, be bigger than, you know, like football's important. But when you first reached out to me, you said you wanted to quit football, but it was your only identity. Now you love football again, but it's not your only identity. Would that be fair?
Yeah, no, definitely. Now we teach kids to have a bigger purpose too outside of footy, because rugby league for me is only going to last another 5-10 years, 10 hopefully. But yeah, and then what do I do after that? Like, there's got to be something bigger than footy.
So you come back from the Warriors, and obviously I know the story, but for everyone else, you come back from the Warriors, you're still involved with them, you're involved with Reddy, obviously, but then you have, well, just take people through the process. You just come straight back to work here at the gym, straight back to running programs, bro camps in particular, programs for schools, and then you're in rehab effectively for, what, 8 or 10 weeks? It was a long time.
Yeah.
Before your first actual game at Reddy.
7 months, from December till July.
Right.
Was, yeah.
So you missed the first, how many weeks of the season? 8 weeks?
Yeah, I think it was like between 8 to 10 weeks. I missed, and like usually I've had six surgeries. I think usually I am a mess after surgeries. Like, I'm just the worst headspace. But knowing that I was coming back to be able to inspire the kids as well, and I knew that a lot of these kids like look up to me too. So if I was kicking stones, what does that show these kids as well? So
we're running programs, we're working in the gym, You're just doing your training, and then you have your first couple of games one level down, and then your first game back at Ready, you have a cracker of a game. Talk us through that game.
Yeah, it was unreal. I wasn't really nervous. Usually I get like a little bit nervous before games, but I was pretty relaxed. I went out and did a lot during the day, which takes my mind off footy, and then, yeah, come footy time, I think I was just excited to be.
And you're playing the number one team in the comp at the time.
Number one team, so there was not as much pressure, I believe, I feel, to win. So you just go out and play your own game. Yeah, it was good. I haven't been in that level for 4 years.
Scored two tries.
Yes.
A try assist tries. All in the first half, and then a try-saving tackle in the second half. How's the body?
It was sore afterwards, but being a 6 o'clock game, I didn't really feel the effects as much as I did the next two games.
Mm.
The next two we played at 2 o'clock. One was a country round. The field had a cricket pitch in the middle. You can imagine the grass was dry as, and the cars were gone. And now you're starting to feel the effects of performing week in, week out at that level.
Mm.
My calf muscles are that sore. Hammies are starting to tighten up a bit. So it's just about staying on top of recovery. And this is sort of the part that I miss. This is the true part of being an athlete or high performer, is doing all the 1%ers right outside of footy. So
can we talk about that first game? Like, you're the king of the kids. All the kids come out and see you, and you give a crazy amount of time to them. And that's just who you are, and I imagine that'll stay the same at NRL level. But there was a significant sort of incident, if we can talk about that, that happened to you after the game that brought back the reality of the fact that this is just football.
Yeah, so there was this young kid that was just waiting, hanging around for me to sign his shirt, and I got talking to him, and it was school the Monday following, and I was just like, oh, yeah, what school do you go to, where you at? And he told me he was from Gympie. And then he nearly started breaking down crying. And then the guy next to him told me that his parents and his sister just got in a car crash in Toowoomba, and the mum and daughter just passed away that night, and he just found out.
And this NFL's probably 12?
The dad was in a coma. I think, yeah, it would have been like around 10, 11.
Right.
And
it rattled you because I was on the field.
Rattled me straight after the game. Like, I was just like, I was just in shock that some young kid could show up to a footy game, happy as to be there, but he's just lost both his parents and his sister. So it was heartbreaking. But, for me, it was just like, how can I try and make this kid's day somewhat better and leave with a smile on his face? And I just told him that I'd send him a Ready jersey, which I have, which probably means nothing now, but hopefully it'll become an NRL club soon and he'll remember that. Apparently, the guy that he was with, the carer, said this is his first live footy game that he's been to. So I just asked what his favourite club was, and it was the Broncos. And I was talking to them at the time.
Mm.
So I told Alex Glenn, the captain there, and then they're going to try to sort something out post-COVID because we're obviously still in a lockdown at the moment. So hopefully we can sort something out for that. But, yeah.
It just highlights that there's things bigger than what we're focused on. As important as football is right now, there's things bigger. But then football gave you the chance to give him something.
Yeah. That's why I love being in the position that I'm in now, because I have a stronger voice and I'm in a better position to be able to help and inspire this younger generation.
So now we're fast forwarding. You've had a couple of games back. We can talk about this. You were struggling a bit mentally, and and we work together every day and we talk together every day, but you actually just said to me a week or so back, can we actually start doing mindset sessions again, because you were just kind of struggling. Explain what you were struggling with.
Yeah, just being an athlete. Being out for like 4 years at this level, it was sort of draining me. There was so much highs in the first week, and then you've got to keep backing it up week in, week out. And I wasn't performing as well as I wanted to. You start to get little niggling injuries.
Was there more pressure because you had such a good first game, do you think? And against the number one team? Did that, like, as you ran that 90-metre try or something, like, did that put pressure on you for the next few? Did you, of yourself, go, all right, because I remember when you're going out for country round and your mum was in here and she said, I want two tries from you this weekend. And you said, only two. So you were on a high. You were confident. And then when you, that doesn't happen, is that a part of the process, do you think, where you go, okay, that's a reality check?
I wouldn't say the tries so much, but performing well at that level that I did the first game was definitely something that I wanted to carry out, and I wasn't doing it the following 2 weeks. So, yeah, I guess that, and then just trying to get my mindset up for the game each week. I know the country round week, being out in country, like no fans, no one to pump you up, you're sort of like, oh, yeah. Like, what am I doing?
The town would have loved it, though.
They would have loved it, yeah. Mm. But, like, week one, we had thousands of people at Redcliffe Stadium. Like, it's a gun stadium, too, so they're easy games to get up for. It's 6 o'clock at night, so it's the weather's not too hot. So I guess I wanted to do mindset work again just to get myself being grateful for being back in this position, because 2 years ago I didn't want to be here. So,
and doesn't that highlight the fact that we always need to be evolving and developing? Like, none of us have nailed this stuff, and we're all going to have ups and downs, and so it's about constantly, no matter how high a performer we think we are, we're constantly looking for the next thing. Yeah. We're looking for that next improvement. If you ever rest on your laurels, that's when people start to overtake you.
Yeah. I'm keen to see now, well, I'm so great, yeah, who I've signed with, but what the high performers and what this club's doing.
So before I get to that, let's talk about in those first three games at Ready, and obviously we're now in a lockdown, so there's no game last weekend, just gone. But in those first three games, was there any thought, doubt or belief one way or the other that you could be an NRL player? Or did you say, I've still got a lot of work to do? Or were you kind of thinking, well, maybe I'm not up for that anymore? What was your brain doing as far as NRL goes?
I know that I won't be an NRL player until I get back into an NRL system. So, like, getting back into the NRL system is my goal, and I know that I'm not too far from that. But I know I'm so far away from actually being an NRL player.
So if people said to you that 4 years of no playing, let's be honest, not really playing at that level until these three matches where you're starting to, you have no right to be signed to an NRL team.
Yeah, no, not at the moment anyway. Not with three
on
games.
Paper.
Yeah, not with three games in your belt.
So then let's fast forward. You've had conversations with three different teams and a couple of loose conversations with two other teams. So all of a sudden after your first game, they started sniffing around, and then we don't have to name all the teams necessarily, but you decide to sign with one, which we will name.
Yep.
So talk us through the team that you've now signed with and what the process in your brain was about choosing that team over the other teams, because you pretty much chose the top of the tree.
Yeah, so I've signed with the Melbourne Storm for 1 year, which is massive. They're the top team over the last 10 years, in my opinion. They're more the Roosters.
Probably even longer. Yeah.
Yeah. And my reasoning for signing with them is, like, they're the best team, and I've been out of the game for so long that I know that that will best help my footy.
So, because a lot of people would have went the other way and said, "Hey, if you go to the Storm, you're not going to get match time.
Yeah.
Why don't you go to a lower team where you're guaranteed some match time?"
Yeah, and I spoke about this to my partner Krista, because it's sort of a back and forth conversation, but it's not about playing 20 games. It's about playing one quality game at the best of my ability, and I know that the Melbourne Storm will get the best out of me. They've, like, their rap sheet says a lot. They've brought average players to what most people think into absolute guns. So I always we teach these kids what's the number 7 success principle?
A physiology and psychology of success.
Yeah, so to hang around the top 10% of their field, and the Melbourne Storm are exactly that. They've got the 6 and 9 for Origin, which are my positions. The number one is and will be an Origin player in the next 2 years as well. So,
yeah, so for people listening, this is not just sports related. The idea behind physiology and psychology of success is, don't look at what, in your case, NRL, don't look at what an NRL player does, because there are some NRL players that might only play 20 matches in their career or 3 years. Look at what are the top 10% NRL players doing? What are the top 10% of whatever field you want to go into? What are they doing? What are their physiology? So what are their actions and their psychology? What's their mindset? What are they learning? What are they teaching themselves? In the physical sense, what's their recovery like? What's their, you look at someone like a Cameron Smith, you know, who played, what, 18 or 19 years at top level. Like, how did he do that? How did his body continually, it's not like he was a big physical beast. So obviously going to that system is the way to do that. But it's easy to say that, but then to actually do it. Most people, when faced with an opportunity to easily slide into an NRL team and get game time in a losing team even, when they've been out for 4 years, would choose that option every day of the week, as opposed to going to the best system in the comp, saying, I may never get game time, but I'm going to be surrounded by the highest performers. Intimidated? Excited? What's your sort of both? What's your brain going through?
Nah, I'm excited. I know Melbourne's such a big club too, and I'm the best version of myself that I am right now. And if I can get in to the sponsorship team, like the whole club, and they get a feel for who I am, there's no doubt that once they know that I'm running personal development camps for young teams, that they'll jump on the back of that as well.
So tell me what you bring the Storm. So here's the thing. It's an opportunity for you, and you're going to learn, you're going to grow. But everything in my mind is a scale, and we want to win-win on that scale. So they're giving you opportunity. That's great. What are you bringing to them?
Humour.
good looks.
I've obviously, like, I've got a story. I've been resilient through my story, and their club's built off resilience, turning up for one another. So I think I fit the mould there with their traits as well. So yeah, and I guess I feel like they wouldn't really have had a player like me come through the system as well, or come into the system having lost everything and then coming back in. So
what's your expectations over the next 12 months? Like, what are you hoping to experience? What are you hoping the next step is after this and so on?
To learn as much as I can off the best players in the comp. I don't really expect to play a game. I expect to have the hardest preseason of my life. For those that don't know, I'm expecting a baby in November too, so I'll have to be away from Krista and my baby for the first part of preseason, which was a challenge that we're willing to do as a family. And then she'll move just after January. So, yeah, I'm just expecting it to be a tough slog out for the first part. I'm just looking forward to being back in the system, looking forward to growing our family into three and then taking on any challenges that come.
So a game comes up next year, let's say State of Origin, and so they're going to need players. You're going to be in the top 30. You're going to perform at the level that we know physically, mentally, you're capable of performing. And I think your mental side is way stronger now than it's probably ever been. And then you build your physical capacity and your skill set up to that level. Can you fast forward into your own brain into what it might feel like to run out onto any field in Australia, whether there's a crowd or not, in the Melbourne Storm colours, taking that opportunity? What's your sort of thought patterns around trying to soak that moment up and enjoy that moment?
Yeah, I think there'd be a lot of tears. I'm a bit of an emotional guy when it comes that sort of stuff, but it'd be the ultimate comeback story. It would top off. It would add a bigger dimension to my book that's going to come out in 5-10 years.
Yeah.
It'd be unreal. I've always imagined
your mum and dad sitting in the crowd. There's a crowd.
As I'm running out, my mum would be right there on the field. I'd make sure that's her dream. Give her a big hug, like she did before our New South Wales Cup grand final or semi final. I can picture that. I'd just soak it all up. For me, I've always dreamt about having a massive box in the stand and then having all these young kids from our camps being in the stands too.
Yeah, that'd be pretty cool.
Yeah.
So how do you continue work with us, like BroCamp and Building Better Humans Project? And because for people to understand, there's a much bigger picture of where we're taking this project, the Building Better Humans Project, the BroCamps, the school stuff, and you will be a part of that forever. But football does have to be your number one focus. And a few people have said to me, which we're talking about before when Krista was in here, have said to me when I've told them around the gym that you're going to sign with an NRL team soon, their response was, disappointment. Oh, you must be really disappointed to be losing him. You go, are you kidding? That the whole purpose was for you to make this back. None of us knew if it could happen, but we were going to leave no stone unturned. And people say that, but we were doing that. So from that point of view, how do you stay involved? What are you going to bring? Like, you're going to be in Melbourne. You know, do you think there's a possibility of us bringing BroCamp to Melbourne, which we get asked about a lot because you're there?
Yeah, 100%. And that excites me too. I guess for me, number one's definitely family. Number two's footy. And then I know that what helps my footy is helping young kids, inspiring young kids and telling my story. So once I get comfortable in Melbourne, then I'll start to seek going out to schools and continue sharing my story around there and looking at different ways that we can run our camps in Melbourne.
2 years ago, pre and post the Dolphins camp, did you ever think, I know you always loved footy, even though you hated footy for a while, but did you ever truly think back then even that there was honestly a chance of the NRL again, or did you think you'd thrown that away?
No, I thought I threw it away. Yeah. Like, and it probably wasn't until I got that little gig with the Warriors where I started to realise, actually, I can get back here.
Because you're old, right? You're 25.
25. And that's
so in
old.
A football system, that's like, why are we taking a risk on this guy?
Yeah. And I remember I spoke about it in one of the podcasts. I don't know if it was here or BroChat, but there was two people that inspired me, and it was Cody Walker and Jordan Kahu.
Mm.
And the way that they just kept turning up, like Cody Walker didn't debut until 26.
Yeah.
I'm only 24 at the moment, so...
One thing I like about you going to a good system is there's this old story I heard, which I actually pre-recorded for the podcast, for this podcast next week. And it was around this guy comes into a new job, and one of the other guys working there said, this guy got a job in our organisation and he's not qualified or good enough to be here, and I don't expect him to be here long. He said, but then all this time later, like a year later, he's still here. What changed? And he said, what changed was rather than just sit and watch this guy fail, everyone got around him. They started taking him out for coffee. This is in a corporate setting. They started asking him questions, seeing where he was straight. Everyone supported him, and he actually became good enough. So if you put yourself in a system like the Storm with the mindset that you've got, which is what I think the strength you're going to bring their young players, the skill set you've clearly got, but then is going to get refined again now to NRL level, and they truly want you to succeed, and you've been on calls with Craig Bellamy. So the fact that he even took the time to sit on that call, the greatest coach the game's probably ever seen, realistically. I mean, I know Wayne Bennett's right up there, but you couldn't put him too far behind, I think, on par with what he's achieved. Like, to have him sitting on that call, to have you surrounded by the right people, for you having the hunger for personal development and success, to me, and I think this is going to be the title of this podcast, that is literally the perfect storm. That is literally, and a perfect storm means all of the elements coming together to create this perfect environment for you to succeed. That's literally what's happened.
Yeah. Well, I had the Storm recruitment give me a call saying that they were interested in signing me. And I was just like, oh, yeah. And then yesterday, I had a Zoom chat with Craig Bellamy, Frank Panisi, and Bunny, his name is, and like, they wanted me. And they said that on the chat. They were just, feeding me with positive information, but just, I just feel wanted at that club. And they even said, like, 6 years ago, you turned down us. But now, like, you got another opportunity to be here, and we don't always do this.
Yeah, who gets two opportunities at the Storm?
I just said, like, it obviously wasn't meant to be back then, but, like, you've definitely got the better version of myself now, so.
I know we can't talk about, things that haven't happened, but what if... I'm just asking this out loud. What if you had signed with the Storm back then? Do you think there was a chance that you maybe wouldn't have gone down that road just because of the system?
Nah, I still feel like I would have.
You still would have made that mistake, you reckon?
And Melbourne's such a big place too where...
Could have hidden.
AFL was in the limelight and you could have hid from it.
Yeah, gotcha.
Yeah.
But for me, a large part of what caused you to go down that spiral, and I'm not making excuses for you, but was injury. And then as an athlete, when your only identity is football, once I'm injured and not playing as well as I expect to be playing, then it's easy to make excuses for yourself. My belief is maybe had you been at the Storm, they would have made sure you did your prehab and your rehab better. They would have looked after you. They would might have insisted that you do your recovery. Maybe the players there would have held you to a higher standard and maybe you would have lifted to that standard.
Yeah, I feel like they would have. I remember when I first went for a meeting 6 years ago, they said that if you don't fit our club culture, you'll certainly get found out. And
so actually, that's a good thing. Maybe you wouldn't have fit the club culture back then. The party boy Jaden wouldn't have fit the club culture. But the Jaden that we know now, that people on this show would know, that people on Bro Chat, Project 180 would know, that guy definitely fits their culture.
Yeah. It's I'm grateful for the last 6 years because there's so many lessons in my life that now I can teach as well.
Yeah. So, mate, kind of just to wrap up this show, like young people listening, and this is the biggest lesson I tried to teach you right from the beginning was that, and not just you, but all of the Dolphins, was that you're young men, you're going to make mistakes, but you are not the mistake. And by that, I meant that you can choose to change the story anytime you want. And once I truly taught you that, once we started working together, you changed the story. I guess what's the message to young people listening or to anyone listening who's kind of finds themselves in a point in life where they feel like they've spiraled, they've made mistakes, and then they continue to behave towards that mistake, which then does make it the problem. What's your sort of thoughts on how does your story help them?
Yeah, I guess I'm living proof of you aren't your mistake. I guess if you are in a downward spiral and you think you're at rock bottom, look at what do they say? Write down all the dumb things that you could do.
So write down a list of things that I could do to make this worse.
Yeah, and then look at the position that you're in now and don't do them. Mm. But I guess the biggest thing is don't be a victim. Don't be a victim to where you're at now, because you have the power and the influence to change where you are right now. And, surround yourself with good people.
So one final thing, and I think this is relevant to talk about in this current climate, is already there's some news broken about you making the Storm, even though we haven't made it official. No one's made it official. And already, I'm sure, I haven't read it, but I'm sure you have, there would be social media experts who'd be bagging you out. How do you prepare Krista for this? You know, this is a woman who's having your baby that you're getting married to, who loves you. How do you get her and your family and everyone to go, okay, you're going to get all this stuff that's going to drag up things that happened 4 years ago and ignore the 513 kids we've put through programs, all the good stuff you're doing now, and now you're going to read this, he's a drug cheat, he's this, he's that. One, how do you process it, like now, even compared to a few years ago? And then how do you prepare Krista, your mum, your family, your friends, all the young boys that have been through programs that look up to you are going to read all this stuff about you? How does that all get processed, do you think?
Just keep being the best version of myself on socials. How do I prepare Krista? I already told her to talk to Cody's partner, Brianna. She's been through it for years, and obviously Cody's played a handful of bad games and caught a bit of smack. So,
actually, that's interesting. I've watched a couple of – I read that stuff when he's having a cracking game and everyone raves. And then as soon as you have a bad one, boom, they're on you.
Yeah, they change just like that. So, Chris is good. She knows how to stay neutral. She always brings me back down, especially when I've played such a big game. So, I guess it's just you live and you learn, and we'll pick it up as we go.
And for young people listening, I guess, how do they process social media themselves as a bigger conversation? And not to go too deeply into that here, but how do they process? Because I listened to Joe Rogan once and he said he's never read a comment. When he posts something, or now his team posts something, he never reads the comments because he said there's never anything good in there. Like, yeah, there's some people that go, it's amazing, but mostly it's people who haven't really achieved anything having a go at you. And if you read it, it just lodges in the back of your head somewhere, even if you try and ignore it.
Yeah, well, most of the comments will be about me, and I won't buy into any of it. It won't affect me, so if you are listening, it shouldn't affect you too.
Yeah.
And don't let it affect you.
And just explain to the people around you, and your mum and I were talking about this the other day, not to bite, because she said sometimes it just gets her so angry. And I said, it's not worth biting.
Yeah.
Like, you're not going to change their opinion of you. You'll go out and, I don't know, you go out and win a grand final. Say 2 or 3 years' time, you're fully in the Storm. Some things have changed, or any other team, but let's say you stay at the Storm and you're their starting player and you kick a goal or take the match-winning try, and someone will still go, yeah, but 6 years ago, he did drugs.
There's always going to be a yeah, but.
Yeah.
So the best way to respond is either don't reply or send something positive back.
Yeah. I hope everything's all right in your life right now.
Because we know before, in the past, that something has been wrong in the past with that person, and then they start to cry out all their problems.
Yeah. And we've talked about it a bit. Mate, from my point of view, obviously our journey together hasn't finished. It's a lifetime journey for you and I now until one of us dies. That's just what it is, right? Mm-hmm. But for me, I'm incredibly proud of where you've come. A lot of people talk about wanting change. A lot of people start to do the work and then they realise it's hard work. And if your sole goal was to make the NRL, it can be hard work with no result. But I feel like even if we hadn't got the NRL, you were still going to be okay. So I feel like because you were willing to do the work. And so I've had people reach out to me, people that you know or that are close to us, but even other people saying, I want you to do for me what you did for Jaden. And I go, I literally did nothing for him. He had to do the work. And I've recognised in those people, they're not willing to do the work. So for me, mate, I just want to say congratulations. I'm hugely excited. I think your voice for younger generation is going to become stronger now because of what you've done. And I know that, you know what, this it's still an up and down road. There are going to be setbacks and there are going to be wins. And I think that you're mentally, physically capable of handling both. So, mate, welcome to the Melbourne Storm, mate.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Building Better Humans podcast with your host, Glenn Azar. For feedback, to stay up to date, or go back and find an old episode, head over to 180.net.au. Yeah, the Building Better Humans Project podcast. Let's go.